DJ Chill, a person known for his support of local Portland artists. Funds will go towards DJ Chill's recovery after being injured in a major car accident earlier this year. Again, that's the Big Chill Benefit, Sunday, September 10th at the Bit House Saloon, 727 Southeast Grand Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kvu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Coming up on KBOO is Art Focus with Eric Bartels, where he speaks to artist Anna Von Martins about the opening of her show at Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Art Focus is made possible by KBOO members and support from the Oregon Symphony, presenting a special concert, Angelique Kidjo, with the Oregon Symphony. More info and tickets for this event with Angelique Kidjo at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall on Tuesday, September 26th. Available now at orsymphony.org.
Hi there. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO FM 90.7 Community Radio. My name is Eric Bartels. Our guest today is Anna Von Martins, the New Hampshire-based artist whose unique and fascinating work is included in collections at the Berkeley Art Museum, the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and the Smithsonian. The work, sometimes months or years in the making, connects the dots between history, sociology, science, and a sewing needle. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You have an exhibit opening Thursday this week, September 7th, at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. What will gallery goers see?
Well, for the show called Shape View, I will have 8 works on view. They're all fabric works and hand-stitched and very intensely hand-stitched, as you mentioned, years in the making. And the imagery is based on our galaxy's supercluster. And it was a recent cosmological discovery that if you – I'm going to get right into the nitty-gritty of some science talk
here. Comes the science part.
Get the science part out of the way. That they recently discovered that if you subtract Hubble's constant, the expansion of our universe, that this watershed, this gravitational watershed gets shown. And you can see where our the surrounding galaxies, our galaxy – forms a sort of gravitational flow, and that diverges from the neighboring supercluster, whose galleries flow in an opposite direction. And so I use this very evocative imagery that's it's cosmological, but also sort of nerve pathways, and use that as the basis for my drawings.
Now, is this something that can actually be seen? Not your art, but the thing on which it's based, the...
Right. No, it cannot be seen. And that's part of what's interesting to theorize and sort of manifest this abstract concept, because it is very abstract. And it is really just a flow of the neighboring galaxies. I should also say it's the largest known structure in the cosmos. So we're talking expanses of time that, in space that I can't – once the number gets a certain size, I just sort of – But just to give you a sense, it's our supercluster is composed of neighboring 100,000 neighboring galaxies. That's galaxies. So it's just this massive expanse of time. And I, in my work and in past works, have been very interested in mapping and sort of our place in the world and how we identify ourselves. So here on the ultimate scale is a sense of how we locate ourselves in this great space.
Now, I feel like I should try for the listener to describe as best I can what these works actually look like. They are stitched onto black fabric in pieces that are 3 to 4 to 5 feet.
That's right. Yeah. In sale. And each work is uniquely shaped. This is the first time actually I usually work in the rectilinear form, and this is a very organic shape. And the shapes are determined by that gravitational boundary. And what is cool about these works is that they're all different points of view of the same thing, our galaxy supercluster. And so it is almost like but you can just rotate it and spin it. And so it's almost like molding clay, but with gravity. So each sort of canvas, as it were, made out of fabric is a different shape based on that boundary. I've befuddled you.
I am befuddled. Your interest in science, you're not the garden variety artist. I don't mean to sort of sell artists short, but there's a sense here that your interest in science is perhaps beyond the average fine artist. Where did it start?
I have really been fascinated with these scientific concepts, and part of it is from the artist's perspective, certainly, of how we see the world and how we notice the phenomenon around us and how that shapes our experience and how that identifies ourselves. So I see it certainly through an artist's lens. But I think, people often point that my dad was a science teacher, so they often connect that dot right there. And that might be part of it. But I think also it is, as an artist, that science really is about determining patterns. And that's what artists do as well. So there's a much deeper link, a more common link than people think. And in fact, a couple years ago, if I can actually look at the origin of this current body of work, I was invited on a panel with cosmologists, and it was about how the arts and science communicate and how they overlap. And it was specifically on theories of the multiverse, if we want to get into that sort of whole. I won't go in there, but it was fascinating for me to see how scientists, this theory of the multiverse of, that we're not a singular universe and different theories on that, how they would really come at a problem with math and calculations, but also a real openness and creativity. And that way that they sort of viewed these theories was almost how I'm approaching the science and seeing it sort of as a way of trying to take a different lens on it, a different angle, and see what new meaning comes out by looking at it a different way.
Well, the scientist doesn't always have the precise answers for something. I suppose he or she is required to use some imagination at times to sort of work out where things are or how they work.
Right, absolutely. And I should say it's always based on math. And that was what was amazing being on this panel, seeing how these crazy theories of multiple universes and how they would slide and overlap each other, was based on math. And yet you wouldn't be able to see the math clearly unless you had this openness, open approach, this creative approach to the math. And so that is fascinating to me. And I've kind of worked that way myself, that I use a system of seeing and a system to create these more open, fluid, abstract forms.
Do you see this a lot in the work of other artists? And if not, what is the sort of reaction you get? Other artists that see your work, are they as sort of baffled by the science and behind it as maybe the average person, the person who sees it?
No, I think it is an access point. Like, I think it draws people in where there's something that, we all are familiar with, that act of stargazing or that way of contemplating ourselves by looking into the heavens. And so this body of work might take it a few steps further, but there is that known impulse inside us. And I certainly know there's other artists like Spencer Finch or someone who I love who takes physical light readings in different places and then recreates through gels that sense of quality of light, which is amazing work. So it's very phenomenal-based work. So, all artists work in different ways, and mine happens to be very particular to using research as a starting point.
You said that the work at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery was essentially 2 years in the making. You're not taking any shortcuts. It wouldn't work for you to recognize that this work is based on science, but I don't necessarily have to go as deep as I have. You're clearly determined to get the science right.
Yeah, getting the science right is important to me, but I'm also, I think scientists could roll their eyes and say, well, there's a certain way of quote unquote getting it right. There's a certain fact base that is important to me, but again, it's this opening up of an idea. So it's taking idea and expanding upon it.
We talked off air about the split between the painstaking research and the work itself that you do, And the fact that people walking through a gallery don't generally spend a lot of time looking at one piece of art. Do you have to sort of come to terms with that at all?
I think that you make connections where you make connections. And so for that you're not trying to draw every audience member in, that each individual have their unique experience with each individual piece of art. And I think for me, this work, you know, some people see my work and it's just the materials. It's just like the thread and the
white
softness.
Stitching on black fabric.
Right, that
contrast. In an interesting pattern.
And that's what draws people in. And for other people, it might be the title and saying, oh, this has a scientific focus. Like, what is that about? So there's all these avenues that you can draw someone in. And I think there is a way that me pouring my time into an object, that object holds a sense of that time. And it's there if people are interested.
Well, do you think that people somehow sense the care and the time and the effort that goes into a piece of art?
I mean, I do.
Whether they know it or not.
Right. And it's not that one is better than the other. I think for me, these objects have a weight to them that you can see the amount of time sort of poured into it. That's not to say that another artwork that took 15 seconds to make isn't also as engaging and interesting in its own way. It's just that for me, if you even want to get sort of deep about it, this imagery is based on superclusters, which is this light traveling, you know, expanses of time to us. And there is a way that it represents the expanse of time and in that our own mortality. And then that me pouring my own work and the evidence of the hand into that is in conversation with that sense of time.
And you said it's not necessarily important to you that how your art is experienced, that the person who sees it as an interesting pattern stitched onto, you know, quilted onto a piece of fabric, that's a perfectly acceptable way to experience the work.
Absolutely. And I could talk about a previous body of work that sort of gives a good example of this. So a previous body of work, I showed the stars above violent moments in American history. And I used star calculation software to show the actual stars above these moments in time. So, for example, you saw the actual stars that Christopher Columbus saw when he first sighted land, or the stars that from the Lorraine Motel you could see from the balcony when Martin Luther King was shot, all the way up to the Iraq War and the bombs first falling over Baghdad and the stars there. So in that body of work, that span of time. So in that body of work, as the stars go by, that there was a visual, you come into the gallery and you see a visual, sort of the works are engaging on a visual level. But then as you read the titles and realize there are these specific historic moments is another level of understanding. And then for that particular show, I ended up having a handout and I sort of summarized the historic event that happened and gave more historical information. And what was interesting is that the gallery said they had never printed that many handouts for a show before, that there was this sort of hunger and need to hear the story behind the works. And so that was an interesting lesson for me, that you can have the work stand on their own and a story to go with it, and that people can engage, that those two things can mesh and divide depending on what the viewer wants, but that it is okay to have this story sort of feed and build the work to deeper levels.
You have a journalistic interest in these things. You've talked about the information, the text being a crucially important part of any of these installations, any of these sort of bodies of work. The story is important to you as an artist, but you also seem to want to share that story, to inform, to educate.
Yeah, and it's not even, but I think sharing is the right word there. It's not so much educating as that I have a specific point of view that I must get across, but it really is this experience to share and to grow. And I often think that quilts, which are ultimately what my pieces are, that's the form they take, is the structure of the quilt. And that historically quilts are passed down from one generation to another, and they're often told with a story. As you give that object to a granddaughter, a story is told with it. And so I really like thinking that my pieces have their own story that accompany them. And that's also what conceptual art is, right? Conceptual art is very often is sort of an object that is unclear, and then it's given a very precise title that sort of cranks it into action. So in that way, it functions both as a story and simply as conceptual art.
Well, and you wonder if I – when someone sees the work that's at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery now that involves these – what did you call them? Galaxies?
Yeah, superclusters.
Superclusters.
It needs a better word.
you said yourself, there is no real existing image. This is an actual phenomenon, and yet there is no image of it that exists until you created one.
Well, no, that's not entirely true. It's just that it's not a visible phenomenon, but that scientists have calculated this flow, this galaxy flow. And so that I'm basing my work on that imagery. So these graphs that they have shown, the gravitational watershed of galaxies. So I'm basing my work directly on that. However, that imagery is so data intense that there's no way I could do a translation of that, nor would I want to do a direct translation.
Right.
So for this series, what I did was make just essentially gesture drawings and just really outline this sort of spine and limb and sort of shape of these things, and then went in with my needle and sort of built slowly and methodically sort of built up this imagery to reference that directly for sure, but also be its own drawing in itself.
I guess I'm just thinking about, maybe from a little bit of an arts education standpoint, the sort of representation of a feeling. When you talk about the charting the stars that were overhead, whether mm-hmm. they were visible or not, in some
right.
cases some of these events took place during daytime and no one would have been mm-hmm. seeing the stars. The way in which it might allow someone to rethink the event or to place a particular event in a new context. Is that sort of what you're going for, or is it just a reflection of your feelings?
Well, there were two almost opposing things that attracted to me to that imagery. And one was this sort of strange cold comfort that the stars, despite whatever catastrophes are happening below and whatever chaos us humans undergo, that there is this continuing impassive cycle of the stars tracking above. And there was sort of a comfort there that certain cycles continue however much things seem to be completely falling apart. But there also was a sense of really specifically time traveling, this idea that even though it might just be an abstract way of thinking about returning to a time and a place, but that the stars allow us to sort of travel to that time and in that way to sort of sit in those moments of history and remember, first of all, what occurred, and also think about cycles repeating. Certainly history repeating is not a cliche it's a cliche for very good reason. So it was both those things, that the stars were sort of indifferent and engaged us in a deeper way.
You talked about quilting, the tradition of quilting, how in many cases it is a form of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have quilters see your work and react to it?
Absolutely, yeah. There's often a little quilting tribe that will come out to my openings, and I'm sure they have an access point to my work that is completely different on how even my stitches are, or who knows.
Do they express that?
I think among quilters there's a more technical focus often, you know, of sharing of sort of technical secrets, so that might be a more focus for them of the work. But I think, that is why the way that quilts carry a story is exactly what drew me to the medium, because I didn't always work in quilts. I actually worked in drawing and printmaking, and it was when I sort of, saw this rich history, this way that I could contextualize an idea in a different way through quilts that I switched course.
Are there others like you out there? Are there artists working in the quilting medium in any significant way?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole range. I mean, I think I identify almost more as, you know, a conceptual artist, as a contemporary artist. And in that way, I often describe myself as a visual artist who happens to make quilts. So it's more for me that the research and the concepts lead me, and then the quilts are the vehicle that I express the ideas. So there's a whole spectrum. I mean, I think some people just come to it to make a quilt because the materials are interesting to them. For me, it's really the research that leads the way.
What do you hear from gallery goers, people who see your art? Is there anything about the use of fabric or the fact that these are visibly like quilts or, in fact, actual quilts? Do they share anything with you about the fact that fabric is different from something painted on wood or painted on canvas?
Yeah, I think there's because it is these two poles of my work, right? There's the softness and immediacy of the quilt and the sewing, and it feels quite intimate. And at the same time, I'm using these very black, stark silhouettes referencing modern painting, and which is very sort of considered cold. And even if we want to assign sort of gender roles, you know, sort of there's sort of this male, like, abstract hard edge painting, and then quilts are certainly in more of the female realm. So there's these different poles I'm working with. And so there is often a comment that this work is navigating, you know, sort of crossing back and forth between these what are normally separate worlds, and that's engaging.
Maybe the fabric and the stitching and the feel of a quilt makes a more comforting vehicle from which to explore some kind of dark concepts or little known mysterious realms.
Right. I mean, I think you could even say the same about marrying art and science, where science can be seen as just, yeah, cold, hard sort of facts and data, but softened literally through this lens, the facts are sort of seen in this different way. And that is my own interest, to have this more sort of existential pondering, wondering, sort of locating ourselves in this broader universe. That is what I'm interested in.
You talked about vulnerability, mortality. You're a mother of two young children. Maybe that plays a role. Or is it just a sense of where we are as a people right now? Are we in a dangerous time? Other artists have certainly turned their work toward that question of where we are as a people, as a society. Is this something you think about a lot? Does it
absolutely
come into play?
I mean, it's certainly relevant in these times, but it has been throughout my life. That sense of sort of constantly wanting to sort of locate myself and find meaning, and where we find meaning and where we feel lost. And very early on was themes of literal mapping of sort of our true north and finding direction. And that has sort of morphed into these sort of more abstract, grander concepts. But yeah, that, I mean, that what else is living life but figuring out who we are and finding our way?
And that is the artist's role, the reporting in a way, journaling. I mean, I suppose it's what every artist does.
Hopefully, yeah,
artists.
Gaining perspective. Yes, stepping back. Hopefully so.
Have you taken some side trips in terms of your art and your media? Do you ever work? Do you ever paint anything or sculpt anything or draw anything?
Yeah, I've really worked exclusively in the structure of the quilt for the last 15 years, and that is where my ideas have taken shape. My latest body of work is I am taking a little detour. I am working on drawings, which was my original how I originally came to art. And I think in some ways we talked about. I mean, I try not to sort of lay on thick how much time it takes me that I pour into this work, but I think there was so many hours logged into this work of sewing that I needed a break. And I realized, and that is scary as an artist sometimes to take a detour and sort of start a new direction. But doing that, I realized, like, oh, there's an essence that can only be spoken through hand stitching. And so I see myself coming back to that. But sometimes it's good to take a side road.
It's hard to imagine the kind of work that you do and the work that goes into it, it just seems like picking up a pencil would seem so simple or somehow
yes,
unfulfilling.
It was gloriously simple. Although these drawings that I've been making, I realized like are very slowly rendered and layered and built up and built up and paused. And that was actually reassuring to see that my process, even though I was switching mediums, that was the same. And that not – again, I'm not saying that this is the best way to work, but for me it's the truest way to work is to pour sort of time and care and sort of craft an object and have that object carry the idea forward.
You've talked in the past about your father – being something of a creative type that when you were younger, he was always making stuff.
That's right. I mean, I often say that I guess maker is a more popular term now, but I've often said that I came from a family of makers. So it wasn't that my household was a family of artists, but making things. And I think that's where my joy and importance on the object holding an idea, that it's not just out there, but you're anchoring it in an object and that object can carry things forward.
And it suggests that perhaps for you the process is profoundly important, that whole time, all those months, you're making something.
It is, yeah. And if I can, I'll mention another body of work that I recently finished that was based on historic tree rings, and that showed climate change during catastrophic human events. So, for example, during the fall of the Roman Empire, there was this drought cycle that was certainly a catalyst in the fall of the Roman Empire. So the research is driving the work, but then actually taking the time and sitting and sewing these historic tree rings and sort of, again, transporting back to that time, but also thinking about the growth of this tree and the expanse of time and the sort of evolution of human history and then investing my own time into it. It is important for me for that object to have weight and to provide meaning.
There's an interest in things with permanence, history and enduring objects and symbols. Is that just you're an Ivy League graduate?
Throw that in there.
it just seems, and the willingness to really do the investigation. It seems it's another part of the process, and it suggests that again the process is where the sort of satisfaction is for you as an artist.
Yeah, I think that's very true, that there's certainly a meditative sort of calming ritual to the act of repeating this gesture. That is true. But without the idea to fuel it, that is what engages my mind. And that is sort of what engages my interest in the work through this expanse of time, because there is a lot of time.
What's next for you?
I know. What is next? Well, as I referenced that there I'll see where these drawings come into the mix. I am a lover of systems, so I'm going to keep it abstract here, but I'm examining a new system, but through the act of drawing. But yeah, it'll be interesting how those roads merge. I have some shows coming up. I'm showing at the UMass Lowell in the spring, and then
University of Massachusetts
Lowell in the spring, and yeah, Ithaca College this fall. And those will be sewn works. So I'll see how the drawings and the sewn works come together.
Anna von Merton's exhibition, Shape View, will open at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery, 417 Northwest 9th Avenue, this Thursday, September 7th. Anna, thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
My name is Eric Bartels, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO-FM. Community Radio, 90.7.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503 231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Engineering Committee will meet on the first Wednesday at 7 p.m.